Hey guys, the following podcast is a Lady Gang Network and Podcast One production, which means it's going to be awesome. Hello everyone, it's Becca Tobin. On behalf of Jenna and Kevin, I wanted to let you know that this episode you're about to hear was recorded several weeks ago before the passing of our cast member and dear friend, the beautiful Naya Rivera. We know a lot of you are in pain, as all of us are too, but we wanted to release this episode to give you guys a little respite from the grief and the pain, and thank you for supporting the podcast and Jenna and Kevin.
Calling all Gleeks.
I'm Kevin McHale.
And I'm Jenna Ushkowitz.
We became best friends on the set of Glee.
And now we're doing the Glee recap podcast you have been waiting for.
How romantic.
Each week we'll take you behind the scenes.
Spill all the Glee tea.
And break down episodes with former cast, crew, producers, and writers that brought the show to life.
This is Showman's Glee Recap Edition.
I think everyone needs a little more tardy in their lives.
Hi, guys.
He's here. We got him.
It's here.
We wrangled the busiest man on the planet.
The busiest man in hiding.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all in hiding.
Shankman, you were inducted into the Glee family very quickly. You fit right the freak in, and it was wonderful.
Thank you. But it was a good fit. It took me, a while to, get used to it. You know, it was the first TV show I ever shot. And so it was the first, Rocky Horror was the first episode of a TV show that I'd ever shot. And so,
just throwing you into the deepest end possible.
It sort of was. Well, what happened was Jennifer Salke, who, as we know, is now the president of Amazon at the time, was at 20th. And, you know, Glee was her baby. And she was like, why don't you come and do an episode of the show? I think you'd love it. I had known Ryan for years. And I was like, really? Really? I don't know. It's like, I've never done TV. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I could do it, but why would anybody ever hire me to do that? And then she was like, well, why wouldn't we? And things are happening everywhere. So I ended up talking to Ryan. He said, great, why don't we do it? And then they gave me this slot, which for Rocky Horror, which was the, you know, a Halloween episode. And I said, yes. But what was strange was that it was right after Ryan had made Eat, Pray, Love. And so he was about to have to go on an international press tour with the movie. So what I ended up dropping into was the first episode of Glee ever where Ryan was not going to be there.
I remember this now.
I do remember this.
Buddy was panic stricken. Because he was so notoriously specific about everything that he wanted. You know, he approved the choreography. He approved the costumes. He approved every script thing. His approval, if he didn't approve it, it didn't happen. And if he didn't like it, it didn't go in the show. Well, this was the first episode where he was literally not available to approve anything. I didn't know any different because it was my first episode of a TV show, so everything was fine. But I'm looking around and that crew from soup to nuts, like the eyes darting around about, well, what are we doing here? And it was madness. And I remember, I don't know if you guys ever saw this version of the script. The first script that I got of it had something that I thought was a very bad idea, which was that John Stamos's character, he was going to be Frankenfurter, which made it even weirder.
Right.
Because now the adult was the lead in the show trying to have sex with all of the students.
Right.
Right. And I was like, whoa! It got really, really weird because I knew that in the numbers, all of the choreography was going to be very physical because I just know Zach. You know, Zach was my old assistant. So I knew what he was going to do. And I was like, this is not going to end well. And I was like, guys, I don't know if this feels very uncomfortable to me. And then it was uncomfortable to me to feel at somebody else's show. Cause you know, because of my choreography background, it's very easy for me to just put on a different hat and go this is not my decision. I'm doing this for somebody else. And so what I think is only relevant so much,
right. You know? Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely in someone else's court. But I remember before I even came on to like trail for a couple of days or to start prep, that was what had happened. And I was like, uh-oh. And so I remember voicing it to a couple people and it ended up changing. And
I didn't know that.
And so that ended up changing. And I believe that I was part of the discussion about having Amber do that.
Which made sense because, you know, in the episode, like, she's the one who's like, give me the chance. You know, this doesn't seem right. So, like, give me that shot. So that's where the rewrite happened.
How that all happened.
And Zach had been your old assistant. Did that help you, like, coming into the show, knowing, yeah, like, Zach was there?
Yeah. I mean, Zach, who are the people that I knew on the show? I only knew Zach and Ryan.
Yeah, we were all new.
Having Zach there really helped me because I had a shorthand with him that was very, very simple. And if when he came to me, because he was the regular on the show, so like I was now going to him and going like, listen, what are you going to do here? Right. So I can figure out what I need to do as opposed to, because like he'd always just been carrying out my work. So now I'm like, what are you doing? So
especially in absence of Ryan being around, where like Zach also could predict exactly what Ryan would want, especially choreography wise. But I don't think Zach necessarily gave himself enough credit where like he knew what Ryan would be looking for. And so that probably was a good source for you to be like, what do I do?
But also Zach was very forthcoming going like, listen, no matter if Ryan loves it or hates it, he always has notes. Even if he loves it, he's always going to want to change something. So
Totally.
So I don't know what that thing is going to be a change. And I ended up having a talk with Ryan. I was like, you know, you're not here. So he's, and of course, he just had the thing. It's like, Adam, it's you. I trust you. It's you. I trust you. I wouldn't do this with any other director. I would never leave this in someone else's hands. And I was like, I am so scared now. A lie. This is like trying to pacify me in some way.
No, I mean, like, you had just directed one of like the biggest movie musicals. And so like, if anybody could be thrown into, especially this is a musical episode, there are a billion songs in this. It's all musically driven and it's all big and theatrical. So it's like, you have done this, not necessarily in like a pared down TV version where the pace is extremely different. Because I do remember like looking at you sometimes and seeing like the fear of God of like, we already have to move on. Like, yeah.
Like, yeah, on that one. By the way, by the time it's like having a baby the second time, it's like, oh, whatever. It's like much easier. Then I was like always ahead.
Right. Exactly.
One. And on, but oh, excuse me, on the second and third. But on the first one, I really leaned into Joaquin. Like I had to really depend on the DP because I was like,
yeah,
this is how you do it, right? I mean, I've watched the TV show. This seems like how you do it. And it's like, yeah, this is right. This seems right. I mean, the thing that is, there are two things about that show that always sort of were a drag for the directors. And this is not Rocky Horror specific, obviously, but for everybody, the music room and the fucking hallway of no return, you know, and then there was the weirdness that anytime at all the episodes that I did where I would go like, okay, so where's Jenna's locker in this one? And they'd go like, well, where do you want it?
Yes.
No, exactly.
For three seasons, where is it? Usually they're like, we put it wherever the director wants. What are you talking about? that was like strange to me. It's consistency and order. But no one's locker was ever in a place. So that was weird. But like you would get trapped in those rooms because from a coverage standpoint, because there's only so many places the camera could go.
That choir room was...
Listen, once you've shot the choir room, it's easy because you let go of any pretense of trying to, quote unquote, make it special or good. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In terms of shooting the camera, what you're trying to do is just make sure that the performances are that. But I remember that first day that I watched the first like camera blocking that I did in the music room. And I said, so where does everybody sit? And everybody just looked at me like, out. I was like, oh, I guess like wherever you sit, wherever. And you were like, yeah. I was like, oh, Lord. Okay, so then I was just trying to place people where they needed to be to help me cover as quickly as possible.
That's it. That's
going. And then you do the full three camera hose down and just like
of all 80 members of the Glee Club.
Bang, 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 hose them down. Do you know what I mean? And then sort of now let's get a raking shot and let's get the hell out of here. But
I mean, Rocky is such a specific episode to do. Like, I'm sure Ryan had you in mind for Rocky because of your musical background and because of, like, you know, your experience. But, like, that was so, so specific for him to disappear, for him to have to go on a press tour, honestly.
Did you have any, like, experience or love of Rocky before Rocky Horror before coming into it?
It's like I hadn't really explored my love of it in many, many, many years. I was very young when I had that kind of like breathless, oh my God, this is so subversive, you know, like back, like that was when I was like literally a kid. Like when I was, this is how far back it goes. Like when I was in junior high taking piano lessons, I went to a music store and bought the Rocky Horror music book and I learned all the songs on piano.
Oh, amazing. That's awesome. Amazing.
Horror would be like when they have a dinner party and I'd be like, I want to play everyone a song. And they were like, what? And I'd play, they'd all come back and watch me play piano. And look, our son is going to play piano. And I would sing Sweet Transvestite. And it was.
If you're looking for a new snack to help you get through the day, then you need to try Chomps. Chomps meat snacks are a high-quality pantry staple that can be delivered conveniently to your door. They are a great option if you are limiting your grocery store shopping, but still want something nutritious on hand. Chomps products are Whole30 compliant, paleo-friendly, keto-friendly, and free from all 8 major allergens. Right now, go to chomps.com/showmance and use code SHOWMANCE15 to get 15% off your entire order. Chomps are kid-approved, and I love them because they make a great post-workout snack. Chomps are free from GMOs, gluten, soy, dairy, added sugar, added nitrates and nitrites, MSG, artificial preservatives or coloring, and artificial sweeteners. And Chomps is dedicated to producing a net positive effect on the environment and becoming carbon neutral. Plus, they source from farmers that follow natural regenerative agriculture methods like rotational grazing. Again, order Chomps now at chomps.com/showmance using the code SHOWMANCE15 and get 15% off your entire order. We all need a break now and then, so why not keep your brain active while you relax? That's why we at Showmance love Best Fiends. It's a super fun puzzle game and a great escape from your everyday routine. There are thousands of fun challenges and tons of cute characters to collect along the way. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. Now, if you've been a listener of ours, you know that I'm obsessed with this game, and they have so many different characters and use different characters for every level, and you can upgrade your characters and they get cute little outfits with hats. Personally, right now, my Buggles character, who's my favorite, he flies around and has this gigantic hat. I love it. Best Fiends updates the game monthly with new levels and events, so it never gets old, and you don't need the internet to play Best Fiends. So you can play it on your work breaks, while your partner watches TV, or while you're waiting for your coffee to brew. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already with new levels, events, and characters added every single month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips, and you can even play offline. With over 100 million downloads and tons of 5-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends.
You also got Stamos's first musical number in the show, right? Because he didn't do Britney.
Yeah, it was. It was his first one.
Right.
He was also very nervous.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Yes.
It was the most adorable thing because
Stamos, Saturday Night.
Yes, he's like a TV legend, and he's so talented. And he came into that choir room with us to rehearse, and he was so sort of like panicked about, okay, so I'm going to go here. Okay, what if I go over here? And we're like,
just
like,
do it.
Half of us can't dance to save our life. Like, you're already doing, like, far surpassing any of us. Like, you're fine. And he was just so worried about being so meticulous. And that's why, like, watching that number back, I was like, damn, he's good.
Yeah, he's great.
He's really good in that. I remember, like, I can tell you what the fastest number I shot was, weirdly, was Damn It, Janet. Like, I ate through that.
So
totally.
Fast. I don't know why that happened so fast. It's just like Corey and Leah just knew it well. And they understood what it was and what I was trying, I was very quick to say like, no, just go do this and go do this. And everybody, they just responded very, very quickly. And that was a total joy. I remember, Sweet Transvestite ended up taking a long time, but it was
a fucking elevator.
Yeah, it was the fucking elevator and all that. But the one that was hardest
Time Warp.
Was not Time Warp. It was Touch Me. It was
because
there was something about the girls at the window, which by the way was so weird. And
I loved it. Yeah.
It was originally scripted differently. It had them actually in a different room watching it on a TV like they do in the movie.
Oh, right.
I remember, I think it was my idea. I said, can we just put them at the window so we don't have to like...
Yeah.
For this
a whole other room.
A whole other room and on schedule and then that. But then we had to do everybody doing all that Creature of the Night lean in stuff too. Mm. And then it was just a number that had a lot of crap going on.
Yeah.
And then there was the ever famous painting Nia black and putting her lips on and then having her do the opening,
which is so, this episode is so good. And like, I don't know if anybody else could have pulled it off in that way. Like
watching
that opening, I was like, how did they do this again? And now that makes sense.
That's right.
We painted Nia black and leaned her against a black painted wood. Board.
I remember getting sent photos of this. Like, what is happening over there?
It was so great. We were laughing so freaking hard when we were shooting it. It
looked so good though.
Absolutely ridiculous. And it's funny because I think people are like, oh, it's a vis effect. I was like, I don't think there's any vis effects in it. It's literally camera's really close, and then I think in post they just punched up the black a little bit further. But
I feel like we've used our whole budget. There is.
I mean,
oh God, those outfits.
There's some really, really funny stuff in there. I mean, I remember there was some weird run in there about somebody's teeth rotting, which is the reason Stamos does it. I can't remember.
Yes.
There's a scene with Emma, Carl, and Sue in Emma's office. That's where Sue tries to get Carl to be a part of it. And she's like, yeah, 70% of all students have wooden teeth.
Yeah. Wooden teeth, right. That's what it was. And she's like, as a fact, 70% of all the students have wooden teeth.
That's so good.
That was one of the funniest things that I had ever felt. There were some things, you know, and we can talk about the other episodes another time, but like there were some... I will never shoot funnier lines than I shot on.
There were some good.
And it was Ian writing at his best for Jane and for Nia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The shit that came out of Nia and mother's mouth was like, it went so far past weird that it was so outer stratospheric that it was like Nia has a speech with Rory where she's talking about him being a leprechaun. Yeah. Is so crazy. That is, you know, something about, and we all know that like leprechauns like shoes with buckles, which is how we know they're gay or something like in there. There's like, so, I can't remember. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff. Anyway, but back to Rocky. But you know, I was honestly a little uncomfortable with, there were some scenes in there that just felt like they were really pushing it. Like there was the locker room scene or the gymnasium scene and Cord was walking around naked. And it was like, I was like, what world have I dropped into? Like,
Well, the fact that Fox would let us do that.
Mm-hmm.
That was also cut to 5 episodes prior at the beginning of the season. We had talked about, they weren't sure what we could get away with because they moved us an hour earlier in our time slot. Oh, right. And so like I had to they were debate. There's a whole debate whether we could say the word damn, and then cut to Rocky Horror, where there's a whole song called Damn It, Janet.
Right. And there, well, and well, and also, like, I mean, the there were two episodes where I knew that things were going to really go well for the show. Where I was like, okay, if they can sneak this through, then it's all going through, which was grilled cheeses.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was like, okay, that's
yep.
Interesting. And then I don't remember what the third episode ever, episode three of the entire series was, but it was that was the episode.
Preggers.
Mm-hmm. It was Preggers? Wow, you were good at this.
Well, we just recapped them.
Yeah, we're.
and so that's where you meet, where you realize that Sue has a disabled sibling.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
I believe so.
Yes.
And so when that was introduced, I was like, oh, this is very far from a one-trick pony. So
exactly.
It seemed like a really fun opportunity. And listen, it was a great way for me to lose my TV virginity, I'll tell you that.
And we were very lucky.
We just stuck it right in there.
Wow, so to speak.
There were like two things because by this point for second season,
by the way, what did you think when they said that I was coming? Because you guys were musical people, I assumed now that you probably had an opinion about me from Hairspray. So
I personally was very intimidated because was a big fan of your work, but you had also like worked with a couple of my friends before. And Zach obviously spoke super highly of you. So we had nothing but like wonderful things to say about you. But like, I was also just like, well, he does like movie musicals. Our mentality was like, we are still very much in high school. We're like in this fake high school all day. Like, I don't necessarily feel like a professional. But you came in and two things that nobody else really did ever. One is that you were in the recording studio.
I went to everybody's recording, no director, no other director did that.
No, before or after. You were the only one to do that. And that was terrifying because that's where I met you. I was like, oh God, he's going to listen to me. Like to me, that like the recording studio was like my safe space where like Ryan didn't know like doesn't know what I sound like until he hears the finished product. Where
totally.
I've been there being like, sweet, I suck. Right. Let me do it again. And 100 takes later, I'll get it. But you saw, like, it wasn't necessarily about, especially for this episode, it wasn't about necessarily everybody giving this incredible vocal performance in Rocky Horror. This is all about comedy and making sure, like, the story is playing out properly within all of these things. And so, like, having you even, like, direct me saying, now let's just take a step to the left or whatever, where, like, all of that was guided by you, which was really great. And when you watch it back, everything fits and works together so well because you literally stepped in and did all of that.
Well, the thing, yes, that, and also like, you know, the thing with Glee was you were singing songs that you were like shooting a pre-record, right? That you've already made the choices to. So like we had to make choices and then a director would come in and be like, well, I think you should play it this way. Or like, well, I recorded it that way. Mm-hmm. So like there were just two competing choices sometimes that like we didn't get that luxury of having. So somebody like you who came in was like, give us this so we have it. And then, you know what I mean? Like on set, it was the same vision was like, really helpful for us.
It was also your energy was wild because we were all like, we're tired. It's 7 a.m. You'd come be like, okay, so here's what we're going to do. And like you fully participated like in the scenes. Every episode you like, there were some episodes, there's like Christmas episode where we're like, what are we doing? How are we going to make this scene work? You'd be like, I don't know. But we're just going to do it. And here's what you're going to do. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, oh, well. And like us, especially for this episode that is so heightened, to have somebody who is like, you're laughing off camera, you run in and you'll give like super immediate feedback. And like having that to like, these are not short days. And having somebody to push you along and encourage you and be really vocal about it is super, super helpful. That's just your personality. Like you're always just so like warm and exuberant. And so like you can't fake that. And you would come in there and just give like a little extra just so we could like turn it up. But it worked every single time.
Because we're all like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
It's as up as this is, you guys just made me cry. Like,
oh.
It's like, you know, it's been so long since we've all worked. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember I used to be.
What that feels like.
Yeah. And I was actually, I was missing, because there's a, you know, listen, like every show and, every, you know, famously, there's good days and bad days and all of that. Most of my days were really good. And most of my days and my memories of being with you guys and being in that environment are largely really, really positive. And it was an incredibly vibrant, happy time in my life. And coming down, you know, rolling out of bed and coming down to Paramount to shoot was really always a joy. And and you welcomed me with such open arms. And honestly, like, I don't, you know me now, like, I don't think of myself as being anything. Like, I'm just like, no, we're all here. We're all just here working. We're all, I think maybe some of that just comes from us. We're all from theater. Do you know what I mean? And I think that there's a little bit more humility around theater because it's a little more collaborative in general. And so, and I understood the world and the characters. I was the characters. And so it was a very, very happy place. But I mean, but you know, there was the long tough days. I remember, wait, I don't know. Did you guys ever hear the whole thing with Meatloaf that I had?
I was going to ask you about that because I remember there being a story, but I don't exactly remember what it was.
I don't remember this.
It's a short story. I asked, who did I ask?
We have the same agent.
You and Meatloaf?
Yeah.
I love that. Fun fact.
Wow. Kevin.
Now we know. America's been wondering. Now we know.
Yep. Because when I got with him, I remember, I'm like, Dad, Meatloaf and I have the same agent. And he was like, what? That's amazing.
Awesome. I asked the first, I was like, when he gets here, I don't know what to call him. Like, is he called Meatloaf or I call him?
You're like Mr. Bostwick and Mr. Loaf.
And I was, and the day that he was arriving, the first AD just sort of scrambled up to me and they go, okay. They said that what he prefers is either meat or Mr. Loaf. And I was like, you're serious? They're like, yeah, meat or Mr. Loaf. And so I ended up calling him Mr. Loaf.
I was kidding. Oh my God.
Over there. I think one time I was like, oh wait, meat, can you move over there? Like, because of, I literally couldn't believe I was sitting there calling him meat and Mr. Loaf.
What a, I love that people walk away from the show with stories like that. Like, when would you ever?
I ain't gonna lie. That was a weird one.
Showmates is supported by Ritual. We deserve to know what we're putting in our bodies. That's why Ritual is on a mission to reinvent the vitamin industry. Ritual vitamins are obsessively researched, clinically tested, and do not contain any mystery additives found in traditional multivitamins. So right now, go to ritual.com/showmance to get 10% off your first 3 months. I love Ritual because I'm getting nutrients that I don't get in food, that I wouldn't get anywhere else. And there's a minty tab in the bottle. It smells minty fresh, and I never get nauseous after taking them. Ritual's clinical study of Essential for Women showed an increase in vitamin D levels and omega-3 DHA levels. Ritual uses vegan-certified, non-GMO, gluten-free, and allergen-free ingredients, and all their sources are out there for the whole world to see. Their delayed-release, no-nausea-designed capsule is made to be gentle on an empty stomach, and the mint essence tab in every bottle makes taking your vitamins a minty-fresh experience. Daily changes can lead to big results, so start small today. Ritual is offering our listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Try it out, satisfaction guaranteed. So go to ritual.com/showmance to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/showmance. Showmance is supported by Carefree Breathe. They offer a line of skin-friendly pads and panting liners that go beyond leak protection to keep your skin dry and irritation-free. Check them out at Amazon, Walmart.com, CVS, or your local grocery store. Carefree Breathe is clinically tested to meet sensitive skin standards. They are free from fragrances, dyes, and harsh irritants. The air-infused cover has a soft-touch feel and keeps your skin dry. So ladies, let me tell you, there is no other way to go except for Carefree Breathe if you're looking for something that is not going to irritate and that's going to feel great on your skin. Also, for light days, reach for Carefree Breathe panty liners. So when you need more protection, they've got you covered with their super and overnight absorbencies. When periods happen, stay protected and help prevent feminine discomfort with Carefree Breathe ultra thin pads. Start living carefree today. For more information or to buy, check out on Amazon or Walmart.com, or you may find it at your local grocery store or CVS.
Like all the guys being like on these crazy diets because everybody had to be naked.
Yeah, there was a lot of sweet potato eating going on, including, by the way, oh, you know what? His shirt did get ripped open. I was going to say, most particularly, I remember Matt being very sweet potato, Mr.
Yes.
Oh, because the shirt had to get ripped open and touch me.
It was very racy, him just complete with a tie on. I was like, wow. It's yeah. great, but you know,
I suspected he wasn't mad about any of it, but it was, and I'm nothing against it. I was just like, no, he was going for it.
Right.
Everyone was ready.
And yes, and Corey, very ready. And, by the way, when, like in real life, I think it would be interesting. I think people don't understand what lighting did for Cord with is that, he absolutely looked like he did on the show, but he looked bigger on the show. Like,
yes,
I was like, dude, you need to get a sandwich. Like, you are really thin. Like, it's not lean. You are like freakishly thin right now.
I remember we were all like, Cordy, we're worried.
Eat something.
Yeah, you need to eat. Here's a muffin.
Yeah, it's like a toothpick with a big blonde head on it or something, and then like you know a bunch of
18 abs.
It's true.
And he was really new to the show also when we did that.
Brand new. We just threw him in too.
So Rocky was really early on for him, and then the other thing that I remember is while we were shooting, what was rehearsing for the next episode, and so we were having to jockey for. Like I had to punt them off the stage was Darren's first episode.
Oh yeah.
I met Darren while I was shooting Rocky.
And then how long was it till you came back?
It
wasn't very long.
I did one a season for three seasons.
That's all I could handle.
I feel like we saw you more than that. You
know what? I think that there was a real allegiance to the directors that were, you know, very consistent. It was Eric,
Alfonso, Beaker,
Paris.
Yeah, that's very true.
And Ryan would come in and do stuff.
And Brad and Ian, too, later on as well.
Later, yeah, but while I was there, it wasn't so much. I think my third year is when the Beaker Falchuk started to happen, and then Ian didn't come in until after.
So
I think as often happens on a TV show, the longer a TV show runs, oftentimes, I'm saying this to an audience, your audience as opposed to you. They generally, you know, there are people who are on the crew, there's cast members who suddenly like, well, I want to direct an episode. And so the showrunner to make everybody happy and to hopefully stave off having to give people bonuses. Well, our raises will give them an episode to direct to pacify them. And Ryan was always very loyal about that and very supportive in that way. Although I think the line got longer at Glee, the longer the show was running, where people were like, I think, did Matt Morrison an episode?
Yeah,
he did a Christmas episode.
Yeah, I was hearing rumblings actually on my third year that like there was like people really who wanted what they wanted to. I know that there was just discussions about a lot of people doing it, and And when I heard that, I was like, yeah, they're not bringing me back anymore. This is like, what that person is going to take my slot.
Yeah.
It was like a lottery. They're like, we can do like one a year of like a cast member or like somebody else.
Well, we also had like, you know, Carol Banker did an episode, who was script supervisor before Babs came in, and then Babs directed an episode at some point as well. Chris directed an episode at one point. So it was all this. Yeah, there was just a lot of us.
There was a lot of people who wanted to direct it. But, you know, and I can tell you that they wanted to direct because they knew that Ryan was very loyal to that company of people. But right. Because it was such a weird and wild show. And it afforded you the opportunity to shoot things that you would just never, ever do again. Mm-hmm. And to watch actors say and do things. I mean, the thing that was so amazing for me on Rocky Horror was you guys had still no concept of the world that you were kind of walking into, how big the show was going to get. Had you even done a tour yet?
We did one tour.
We did one tour, the small one.
Tour. And I'm sure everybody talks about this, but it was really, really true. It's like, if you weren't shooting, you were in a dance rehearsal. If you were in a dance rehearsal, you were recording. There was just like no downtime. I mean, certainly not the first few seasons. And then like you didn't. And so you were so insulated in my memory from the kind of the tidal wave that was growing, the tsunami that was happening, that it was literally just work, 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 work. And I know that you know that and you remember that, but I, you know, and I think that probably people talk about it, but I can sort of bear witness to the fact that it was really, really true. It was just, it was very factory-like.
Right.
And there was no real sense of how the outside world was reacting to all of this, other than to know like, oh, the episode did well this week. And, mm-hmm. you know, but you know, that doesn't translate into anything really. You know, you're just like, you're just aware of something. And so there was a legitimate innocence about you guys when we did that episode that was really quite sweet and quite beautiful. I have that great, where do I have that? I think I even have it framed somewhere. I have that great picture of me and Corey and Leah laying on the bed holding the script.
Mm. Oh, cute.
When they're talking about it. And laying on our stomachs on the bed with the script, reading the script.
I'll never forget those. There's a light numbers. That number. That was
that weird thing. How about that?
That's so funny.
I have a solid 30 to 40 photos on my phone that I refuse to delete from that day because we were all just like bored, like behind those things. And
they asked me and I was like, no, please just make them out of cardboard. Do not. They kept trying to make them like better and stuff.
Yeah.
No, I want this like full fucking Charlie
High
Brown.
School. Yes.
I want it. I want to like it like to be best. I want it to be like marker. Like,
yeah.
And the more do the better. And they're like, I don't know if Ryan's gonna like that. And I was like, I promise
you. Like, he's not here.
They're so brilliant.
He will love it.
I mean, coming into the show, Shank, like, because the show had been successful, right, to some extent, but we hadn't, you know, we'd only seen some version of what that was. Did you think you were walking into a set of like little
Divas.
Assholes?
I didn't.
Are you worried?
If you go back and look at my IMDb, you'll see that I've worked with some people who have reputations for divadom. And, I'm not afraid of people people with ego. And I was I didn't know what I was walking into. I knew that, you know, Zach had sort of told me dribs and drabs about the kind of the group dynamic. Mm-hmm. There is a bit of, you're going to really like this person. You're going to really like this person. This person's going to be a little hard. And I was like, he was like, by the way, you're going to get along with everybody, but at first it's going to be this.
Resistance.
And he was fairly accurate. Although having that armed with that information, I came in and just was like a splatter machine gun. I was just like, you're going to have to just listen to me and pay attention to me. And then I'm going to be really fun. And I'm going to make you freak out because I'm just going to be so much that you're not going to know what to do with me. So I'm going to use like nuclear energy to neutralize any kind of weirdness that you guys might have.
It was true. It worked.
See, that's what I was talking about.
It totally worked.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, it's easy when you know that you're having to shoot 9 pages in a day and you're like, and I'm used to shooting 3. And okay. So looking at 9 and I'm going, okay, so it, you know, all shooting, all directing is doing is just like a puzzle. You know, I mean, you're just trying to put the puzzle together. And so, you're making the puzzle while you're doing it.
Right.
You're in charge of the puzzle.
The puzzle. You're actually carving the pieces while it's happening. But so you have to make sure you hit each other.
Right.
So in a weird way, it was like a fun game for me. Like I was like, how can I do this even tidier? And how can I do this? Like, what can I do to make them motivate the camera so I don't have to cover this? But I don't know if you remember this about me. This is always my favorite routine. And by the way, it's true. If somebody would say like, but wouldn't it make sense if I walk over here? And I was like, if you walk over there, it's another 2 hours, but sure.
Yes. Yes. We'd be like, great. I'm not going there.
Here. Yeah. You know?
That's right.
It's just a relight. We'll just have to move the camera. And, no, actually, you know what? You're right. I like the bed.
You'd hear the collective groan of like, ugh.
Oh, yeah. But it's true, you know?
Yeah.
That's your experience. I mean,
you knew how to talk to us because we were like green and still new to all of this, but we could speak hours. If you're like, well, that's another 3 hours. You're like, all right, yeah, we're cool.
We're good.
Also, the other part of it was now, oh, here's the other thing. I knew Matt because of Hairspray.
Hairspray.
The play. And, so that actually was comfortable. And right. I a teeny, teeny, tiny bit knew Jane. And so so that actually made things easier too. But I didn't know what to expect from you guys because you weren't famous. So I didn't know what it would be. Like I had no concept of what you would be. Kevin, I think when I came in, I may have even thought that you were actually disabled. So I think I thought you were in a wheelchair for real. So
nope. A lot of people do, Adam, because they'll say to him, oh, you can walk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, he danced on the show.
Well, it's like in the early days when we would go do press and stuff, I would get the handicapped rooms at hotels.
Is that true?
Yeah.
On tour, he always got the room with like the lowered people.
And I didn't realize it at first. I'm like, Jenna, I got a handicapped room again. I have all this extra room. And then it was like the fourth or fifth time, I was like, oh my God. I was like, don't give this to me because there are people who actually need this
room.
And, you know, it's interesting. I think that they would have, today, they would have had to have hired a handicapped person.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about
also,
that.
I think today, like, yes, having the knowledge that we have, I wouldn't have even auditioned for it in the first place.
Right.
Yeah. But, like, I think about some people who came out. There was some incredibly courageous casting, some really beautiful, some really extraordinary talent on display. And they took swings on things that no other TV show would have taken a swing on. Like,
100%.
The idea of like how Heather got on the show, how Harry got on the show. It's just, it's absurd. And then they turned them into
stars,
you know? And that was really exciting. And it's like sort of being able to recognize young talent and take a swing. It's very courageous. It's very courageous in a world that is, you know, just so desperately afraid of losing money and
wanting to
think of as bankable in front of people. And just obviously the levels of diversity was extraordinary, which was, go back to Rocky. That actually made it a lot of fun. And revisiting Rocky Horror in a way that actually put it on stage is kind of diverse and actually took something that's already twisted and twisting it further and playing with it all, you know, it was bonkers. It was bananas. But as it was
always is
a great time. I have certainly never worked on another TV show where I came away loving so many people, like adoring, and like the fact that we're all still friends and have this sort of deep affection for each other.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
I don't know the last time you guys were over at my house. You know, I have a picture of Corey still up in my hallway of he and I sitting on a couch, like leaning up against each other. Oh. It was like, you know, I'll never really get over that one. For some, I don't think any of us will really. Mm-hmm. That was too much. That was too bad. And but I came away from that show going like, this is a really good thing that this is happening. This is a great thing that this show is, because again, when I saw the pilot, I had this strange, I had a reaction. I was like, I wonder where this could go. Like it felt like a one trick pony to me. Mm-hmm. And then when the creative minds started actually seeing it instead of as a gimmick, as a fertile sandbox for exploring all this stuff.
Totally.
Really opened up, and it was always the dramatic stuff that I loved shooting on the show much more than the funny stuff, because the funny stuff was easy and it was silly and it made me laugh and all that, but like the tough stuff was always I don't know, really fun for me to shoot, like watching you guys, because it was like I got to watch you act, you know what I mean? as opposed to just having to like just service jokes about the character and the situations or whatever it is.
Right.
You
know? Totally.
But I don't know if Rocky Horror, I don't know dramatic in Rocky Horror. I don't think there was. There was a lot of dramatic in Glee, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right.
But and I think a little in Pot of Gold. I mean, Pot of Gold was weird because I remember it was so new and y'all were not having new people at that point. It wasn't that you were mean to anybody. You were just like, I know.
It was also like in the height of the Glee project, which was like a really interesting experience for coming from like a cast who were actors. And then there's kids in a contest and you're like, what's happening right now? And where is this coming from? And so there was a lot of like, we were tired. They were brand new. They were excited. We were like, welcome.
Kind of at that point, there was a little bit of kind of punching in and punching out. Not that that's what was happening.
1,000,000%.
Mm-hmm. But it was.
Oh, yeah.
Like, okay. You know, there's a little bit of coming in. And by the way, at that point, you were also, now you were the show had exploded at that point. Become the thing. I think you probably had gotten Globes and stuff. And I think you were all newly exposed to, you know, the very dark, corruptive nature of, of the fame machine and the disruptive nature of that. It's very disruptive. It's the thing that you can never explain to anybody because and ask for any sympathy, which none of us ask for, but it just creates a very unnatural, uncomfortable layer to your life in the immediate. And then, you know, it's just weird.
That's a very good way to put it.
Yeah.
So,
just super unnatural. And you've gone from being like a person who people react to in a completely normal way and you're doing your job to you're still just doing your job and now everybody's acting super weird around you.
Yes.
Yeah. And it also, I think with that too, we sort of like got more protective of our inner group of like, we've made our friends. And like you said, punching in and punching out, it's like we're doing our job. We don't have the time or energy to like
extend any
other energy to like, let's just nurture this tight group. And obviously we were not complete assholes to everyone coming in, but I think the instinct was to like, let's huddle up and get close because everyone outside of this is acting crazy.
Yes. Right. Everybody really was. And people were acting crazy because of the kind of boundary pushing nature of your show. You guys had, what, you know, your super fans were pretty crazy. I remember. I think that they
so intense.
They identified with you too much. There was no practical application for you to actually to relate to them because they were throwing their own stuff on your characters so hard, so much harder than you. And because you were just existing in that the microcosm of just getting through the show.
Right.
Right.
And I think that goes back to us being like extra protective of one another too. Cause like when we'd go out together, Jenna and I could sort of get away with not being under the radar. As, no, yeah, but like we'd go to the grocery store or go to Disneyland or something with Chris, and people would literally grab him and touch him, and he's like, "I don't know you. Why are you touching me?" Sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it's like when you see people
doing
obviously it's from a great. The intention is great. It's great that they are so passionate about the show. And I think when you are out enough and see people react that way about your friends, you again are just like, we need to double down on protecting each other because this weird little bubble we have can only be understood by, and you got that as soon as you entered our little weird glee bubble during this episode.
Well, because it's the alchemy of what happens on a stage at work is very specific and it's very small. And it's something that happens in a moment. Yeah, those are the moment, and those are just like in real time things. It's not some crazy, you know, like, oh my God, this magic is happening. It's like, it doesn't feel like that. I mean, sometimes you'd do a scene and it would feel great. And then you'd throw it up on screen and there was something that was very or, you know, special about it. And then the fans would go absolutely insane. I mean, again, like what happened with particularly, I think with, Darren and Chris was, and Heather and Aya. That was,
right.
But that was,
yeah,
it was insane. It actually crossed boundaries into, you know, people were hanging their lives on identifying with these people. And I, as much as I appreciate it, it's too, it's just not, it's not part of our real life, their real life. And it's right. Not. And we don't care, or we don't pay attention, or and we appreciate and we try to be appropriate and but it's like it's very disconnected from our real life.
Right. And that was the time when there were the Gossip Girls and the, you know, 90210s and all of these, this elite happening. And then when you had a show for the first time where there were underdogs, where there were gay characters, gay couples, it was like the first time we were really seeing any of that. So the exposure was so little and then became so large on Glee and the microscope, like, and on these characters that, like, that's all they had to cling to, right? Which was like the problem with media, you know, and how we've grown, but like representation. So yeah, but it was understandable, but it was also like it was a lot, you know. It was definitely.
And again, going back to, you know, Rocky Horror, then it's like, again, you're pushing everything even further, and you know, you're doing episodes like I remember a lot of times you'd be like, wait, what are we doing? And I'd be like, you're doing this thing, and you're like. And you would just do it, but it would, you know, it came off with it felt very, it was very confidently put forward, you know, all the ideas on the show.
Right.
They were, in the making of them, they were often not, you know, they were sort of more head scratchy and like, all right, I guess we just try it and, you know,
make it work.
Making a decision and, you know, we'll have to live with it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Like, it, you know, but it's
so true.
Something. And I really appreciated the swing of Rocky Horror. It was like right before we started, I was like, wait, this is a big deal that Ryan's not around. I'm starting to think it's like, I was like, all TV shows are, there was something very surreal about it because everybody was in this, like was walking around like, weirdly on eggshells, but I don't know why, with like question marks floating around them of like, are we all going to get in trouble or something?
Like, are we reshooting this episode? Yeah.
And you know, I was just naive. I just sort of.
It's the best way to come into something like that with Ryan being gone for the first time because he's so hands on. You know, you're like, okay, I guess this is how it's going to work. Yeah. You didn't know it any other way.
Thought it was just that's how it was, and
it's so great.
I came to discover that was very much not how it was.
I also have to say how crazy that like we worked on a show like Glee and then we got to work together again, but it was again in the fastest process in the entire world.
That was ridiculous. That was really, I actually, now that I think about it, that was just stupid. That was absolutely could have been a
like,
disaster, an absolute disaster. The ambition level, I added 30, what if for the anybody who's listening, we did Hair at the Hollywood Bowl. And it was my first professional play that I've ever directed. Did you know that, Jenna?
You know what? I think you told us that, but I don't think I knew that going into it.
And all of that. And I, by the way, I'm from theater, so I don't have any, I had no problem putting it together theoretically. But it was like, it was 11 days.
It was so fast.
And I added crazy amounts of orchestrations from the movie, where they had to dig out the movie orchestrations from a trunk.
Oh.
I can't remember. Somebody's daughter had the movie orchestrations in a trunk in an attic. That's literally where we got them. And then I added like 30 more tribe members than are supposed to ever been in there because I needed to fill out that stage. And then I put more choreographed. I think I had 30 choreographed dances in there.
You did. You definitely did. And Zach looked like his head was going to explode. We were also rehearsed in a gymnasium. That was the best part. We didn't rehearse on a stage. We didn't rehearse in a venue, in a rehearsal room. We rehearsed in a gymnasium.
At a church.
At a church, which was a running school. And my favorite was I didn't know that the school was active and there were children there when to do the auditions where everyone got naked.
No.
I had to do the thing and figuring out how to say to people, well, you got, Jenna, you weren't there. You don't know how I did it. So what I said was, hey, we are doing the nudity in the show. I said to the auditioner, all the dancers, I said, we are doing the nudity in the show is the intention. I'm going to give you 4 counts of 8 of choreography. Then there's going to be 4 counts of 8 of freestyle. Whoever is willing, whatever your comfort level with, whatever comfort level with level of nudity you are willing to go to, please show us that in your freestyle, like let the clothes come off as much as you're willing to expose yourself with. And yeah, if you're not willing to do it, I will. It does not mean you're not in the show. If you are willing to just go topless, show. None of it will matter in terms of you. I just need to know who is willing to be nude and who is not. And this is how we were going to do it. And obviously, I did not have boys and girls together. I did a boys group of it and then the girls group of it. In both cases, they did the 4 counts of 8 that were choreographed. And by count 4 of the second, everyone was bucking.
I love dancers.
Dancing around, twirling around the room. I am super nerdy, like prude. Like, I'm not prude, but I'm like, I get very embarrassed very, very quickly. And I cannot even imagine what on my face is as I'm watching this. And I was trying not to act like embarrassed, but it's a room full of spinning, dance, nude. And I look up and I don't know who had forgotten to tape over the little window in the door. And I look up, Joel McHale's face looking in, who had come to pick up his kid who goes to that school. And it just looked into the auditorium and there's just like naked women spinning and rolling around on the floor in many cases making out. I mean, there was a lot of like touching and
that's hair for you.
Oh my god.
I had no idea
that happened. That was good.
That's my favorite story I've ever heard. Before we go, one of my favorite numbers ever, and now learning that it's thanks to you, is Amber singing Sweet Transvestite. Is there are times when we do versions of the song where I'm like, oh, I think this is maybe better than the original, but usually not, mm-hmm. in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And Sweet Transvestite is so
good.
Fucking good. And it's also for
watch all this.
Like Amber's performance just vocally,
so good.
And then her performing it. And I know that number took a minute to film.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's one of those times where you see everybody sort of like grow up in a different way during this episode. And then when it gets to Amber coming out of that elevator and singing like that, she sang her ass off up to this point already. This was like a whole different beast. We're like, this is like a global superstar where like nobody is singing like this. Like nobody's doing this. And then singing Sweet Transvestite was like, I was like, I don't remember this song having this impact on me when I watched Rocky Horror, which I didn't do until we started filming this episode. Oh, and
bad gay.
I had never seen it.
I know.
So Jenna's like, we're putting it on. And I still to this day, I'll randomly just be blasting Sweet Transvestite.
Amber's version.
Amber's version, because it's just so unbelievable.
Well, again, I didn't have any historical context when I came onto the show. So I that was my first experience of Amber. I didn't realize that she was potentially underappreciated when they cast her. Like, I don't think that they had... I would wonder if they're rewriting history now, but I remember saying, like, Adam knew what she had in her.
Well, because Adam pushed her to, I don't even think Amber knew what she had vocally
totally.
In her, because she had never sung like that, like screaming and wailing.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think, yeah, I think, because she, over the years that I was there, she ended up anchoring more and more of the singing. Alex now, like, look at like that bitch
is
like just the craziest voice.
I know. And what he's doing and Once on This Island did you see it, Kev?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it like
unbelievable.
Standing out.
That was so freaking special. And to see what Alex is taken on and become
totally,
and you know, the launching pad for people who would never have these opportunities is unbelievable. Like, I don't know that the world would have Amber without Glee. You know what I mean? I don't know that anybody would have seen her.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, she's grown so much too and learned so much about herself and, you know, what she's actually capable of, which is crazy. I mean, we've seen her like blossom into this woman that's like, you know, activist and, you know, Olivier winner and, you know, like, who knew?
Well, it makes sense to us because we're like, oh, we see immediately how you should be winning Olivier Awards and becoming whatever you might be become. But when you're the actual person, it's harder for you to necessarily see that. And I think very quickly, we were all obsessed with her voice. And also, watching her grow as an actor on the show was incredible. And so I think you're right. The show gave people chances to find themselves. And like you said, having Ryan trust the creative process and trust Zach suggesting that like Heather should be on the show. And then Harry gets on the show where you're allowing people to like find themselves and find new strengths and talents that they never even knew they had in front of millions of people every week, which is not something that's normally afforded to people.
I was actually really happy. You know, I'd known Harry from my movies. I'd had him in Step Ups. And so but the thing that was so happy for me about seeing him getting on Glee was that it actually made them start writing for you better, Jenna.
Totally.
It was like, I felt like in those first seasons, they didn't know exactly what to do with you.
Totally.
And it was like, we know we have this really talented, great girl with this thing, but
where do we put her?
Yeah, where do we put her? And we're writing all this other stuff for all these other people. And, you know, and then Harry gave them a reason to give you much more of a story.
No, totally. We found our little anchor, like as far as what, because it was like, you know, she wasn't the gold star performer with the big voice and she wasn't, you know, Amber. She wasn't Amber.
Well, Amber, you know, Amber,
and she
wasn't just Amber because of her voice. It was like, she was because of her size, because of her, you know, right. was she.
But the character also became this thing that was like, "Let me duel Rachel. Let me actually contest how good I actually am versus this girl that you think is really great, who she is. But like, you know, let's do that and put these little, you know, feuds into place, which is conflict and interesting and dramatic, you know."
Yeah, and that was never going to be what Tina was like, right. And so for you, I was really happy that here. I mean, like,
yeah,
for
me too.
Artie was very. It just seemed, in a certain way, you just got to carry the mantle of being the kid in the wheelchair. You know what I mean?
Well, Adam, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's not Glee without you, and it's not the podcast without you. So we love you so much.
And like, thanks for spending so much time with us. It's so good to see you and catch up and reminisce.
Glee.
Hey, listeners, we just wanted to take this time to say thank you so much for your continued support of us and the podcast. That said, Kevin and I have decided we're going to take a break. We are just learning how to navigate and grieve the loss of our friend Naya, as we know you guys are grieving as well. We just wanted to say thank you so much for your continued support and understanding during this very difficult time. We love you. We see you. We are with you. And thank you.